Hello. Welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa, bringing you the News Gazette on Wednesday, February 5th, 2025. Let's start on the front page. Right in the middle is a large picture of Iris Markham with the heading, "That's What She Said Project." Long story short, Iris Markham, 90, sees a chance to talk about her life as very therapeutic. By Luke Taylor from Urbana. At 90, Iris Markham is hoping for 10 more years of a life she describes as fun and exciting. Those 10 years will be filled with teaching, volunteering, and spending time with her friends and family. If Markham has anything to say about it, "I want to burn out rather than rust out," Markham said. That's why she said no to participating in That's What She Said last year. At 89, she was too busy. Now Markham said she wants to tell her story while she still can. 90 years in 10 minutes. That's impossible, but I'm doing it, and it's been very therapeutic for me, Markham said. She'll be one of 8 women to tell their story at 2:30 and 7 p.m. this Saturday at the Parkland College Theater. The event is usually held at the Virginia Theater, which is currently closed for fly system upgrades. She said project director Jeanette Jerzik said that they'll be back to the Virginia next year, but in appreciation of how Parkland providing the venue this year. The 2025 show's charity partner will be the Parkland Foundation Women of Impact Scholarship Program. Keeps me going. Markham begins her story with her marriage to Roger Markham. She was 17 years old when they had a wedding planned for the upcoming June, but Roger's National Guard unit got activated and he needed to leave. The couple moved their wedding to December 23, 1951. "I did that mean thing to my mother. She cooked the dinner and everything 2 days before Christmas. Now I realize how much work that was," Markham said. They were married for 53 years. Roger Markham worked in education in multiple Illinois towns, and early on, Iris focused on raising their 2 sons. When he got a job in the Urbana School District, Iris Markham started taking in some of the students over the lunch hour since the school didn't provide meals at that time. "That was what I loved to do," she said. "I just fed them and let them play ball and get the wiggles out before they were sent back to school." Markham realized how much she loved it, and her husband wasn't making a lot of money in his line of work, so she took on her own job as a preschool teacher. She has since returned from and returned back to teaching 4 times, and she's still teaching in the Urbana Park District and even the Racine, Wisconsin Parks District when she visits her daughter. "I love that," Markham said. "It keeps me going. Happy place to be." Markham's life with her family included a lot of hard work, but she has endless stories of how much fun she and her husband had, too. Her story also includes tragedy. One of her sons, Kevin Markham, told his parents that he would not be returning to college at the end of the summer and that, instead, he was off to New York City to work on Broadway. Raj said, "Bring the kids home. We'll figure this out." He was always a very positive thinker, and he said, "We'll figure this out." "So we did," Markham said. She knew Kevin was talented, but she was shocked at how quickly he was able to find a job. Kevin Markham had roles in iconic Broadway shows, from Sweeney Todd to Cats and Les Miserables. And the whole family would visit and stay in his apartment for a chance to see them, bringing food to eat so the men could afford to rent tuxedos. "It's an exciting life," Markham said. "We got to go to the opening night parties at Sardi's and Tavern on the Green and live with the rich and famous." After a whirlwind 13 years on Broadway, Kevin Markham was found dead in his apartment in 1987. Iris said it was later confirmed that he died due to an allergy to cocaine. Markham and her husband founded a scholarship fund at Urbana High School for students pursuing careers in music and theater education, and they always told their son's story. "Just say no. Do not even try it, because you don't know if you're allergic to it or not," Markham said. She still remembers the outpouring of love and huge crowds at memorials for Kevin, both in Illinois and New York. Markham's husband passed away in 2004, but she's still busy with her teaching and volunteering at the Twice as Nice thrift store, which donates to area charities. "It's just a happy place to be, and I get to know all the college kids," Markham said. It's jam-packed now with donations. She's also a deacon at First Presbyterian Church, which comes with more volunteer duties, unofficially including bringing her famous mini muffins to people. I don't really see myself slowing down very soon, because as long as I'm healthy, I want to keep on keeping on, Markham said. Iris Markham of Urbana talks about her upcoming performance as a part of That's What She Said. Great picture at the bottom of the article, too. Another article on the front page with the title, Champaign City Council. Williams apologizes, staying put. Speakers calling for his departure note his failure to meet with critics by Luke Taylor from Champaign. Davion Williams publicly apologized for the profound and immense pain he caused by posting a swastika on his Facebook page, but he stopped short Tuesday night of doing what many called for, resigning from his seat on the Champaign City Council. 4 days after the District 1 representative changed his profile picture to a swastika in a self-described attempt to start a conversation about the symbol's history, both community members and fellow city council members called for his resignation. Williams said he now understands the pain that the symbol represents for so many people and that his intention was never to cause harm. I have a group of individuals that are surrounding me to help me to move forward and to be able to work things out with myself and to be able to transform and make that 180 turn, he said. I know it's going to take time for people to forgive me. I just ask you for your forgiveness. I don't know how long it's going to take, but I'm willing to be patient and wait. In a packed council chambers, many referenced Williams' previous statements during a December council meeting, which included comments implying that a group of Jewish individuals has control over music, over food, over media, and over a lot of things. As he did then, Williams released another statement Tuesday morning apologizing for his post. Many speakers either rejected his apology or said he was unfit to remain in his seat. Rabbi Allen and Cody Cook of the Sinai Temple and Mayan Weinberg, executive director of the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation, were among the speakers who criticized William as he watched in silence. Despite multiple attempts to reach out to Williams, they each said he had not met with them to discuss his statements or try to find a way to work together. The Jewish community deserves better. Our voices here matter. Our experiences must not be diminished, dismissed, or exalted, Weinberg said. Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz also spoke, saying she was wearing two hats as both a Jewish community member and in her elected position. I work with and have met with every single one of the people sitting up here, Reitz said, referencing the other council members. Not you. You and I have not communicated. I need to see you doing the work that needs to be done. Multiple speakers invoked the idea of tetzuva, a Jewish tradition of repentance, which includes both apologizing and taking action to right a wrong committed. Mayor Deb Finan and the rest of the city council issued a statement Friday condemning Williams' use of the swastika, which they repeated during Tuesday's meeting. At this point, Councilmember Williams, I do not trust that you make good decisions or have sound judgment, and although I cannot make this decision for you, I do believe that it would be in the best interest of our city, District 1, our city council, our city staff, for you to resign, said Vanna Pianfetti, the first council member to speak after the public was finished. Councilmember Kathy Shannon said she spoke to many people with different perspectives, and they all agreed that Williams should resign. She pointed out that if he did not resign, he would be elected to another 4-year term in April, given that he's running unopposed. And I think that will be a very hard thing. I think it will be very hard for you to get the work done that I know you are passionate about, that I have seen you be passionate about, Shannon said. And along next side that article about Williams from the Champaign City Council is an opinion piece by Jim Dye, meant to be read in conjunction with that article. So I will read his opinion piece now. Those who don't vote stuck with decisions made for them. This is by Jim Dye. Champaign City Council member Davion Williams said he wanted to spark a conversation when he posted a swastika on his social media site. In that context, it's fair to ask with whom and about what. Here's one topic for discussion. Just how ignorant about the history of World War II and the Holocaust does one have to be to post a swastika symbol on social media and not expect serious blowback? Williams got the conversation he sought, but surely not the one he wanted, whatever that was. It came mostly in the form of denunciations of his judgment, calls for him to resign, and demands for an apology. To which he initially responded, "I was just speaking, using my First Amendment right to say what I want. Why do I need to resign for making a statement?" People have said far worse than that. They surely have, but the First Amendment's free speech guarantee does not immunize speakers from responsibility for the words and symbols they use or others' angry denunciations. It wasn't long before Williams was singing a different tune, this one in the form of an apology issued 3 days later. That, of course, raises another question. Just how sincere is a shotgun apology? Not being mind readers, the public will have to take Williams at his word while remaining mindful that his swastika moment followed on the heels of anti-Semitic comments he made at a city council meeting. He apologized for them, too. Williams wrestles with big ideas, but he doesn't overburden himself with the necessity of actually understanding them. Consequently, he doesn't stick just his foot in his mouth, but his entire leg. That leg ought to render him mute for a while, but he'll return. Those who don't know what they don't know invariably do. In the meantime, here's another question to consider, one some people might prefer to avoid. Who is responsible for the Williams show? He's obviously responsible for what he says and does, but who gave him the municipal platform he uses to shape municipal policy on dozens of important local issues and address issues about which that he knows little? The voters, in their sometimes non-infinite wisdom, did this. Williams got elected in 2021, defeating incumbent Clarissa Nickerson Foreman. In one of those municipal elections where hardly any eligible voters bothered to cast a ballot, Williams picked up 122 votes, Foreman 99. Azar Cobbs had 32. Under our system, the candidate who gets the most votes wins, even if the most votes reflect a relative handful. That doesn't reflect majority rule, but majority of those who bother to vote rule. Champaign and Urbana have municipal elections coming soon, a February 25th primary and an April 1st general election. There are all kinds of low-profile but important issues on the ballot. In the primary, Urbana will be, for all intents and purposes, electing a mayor, and there are two contested races for city council. In the April 1st general election, there are dozens of township, municipal, and school board elections. They will determine public decisions made in the next 2 to 4 years, and they matter. They also may give public platforms to people like Williams. By the way, he's running unopposed. That's more proof people get the government that they deserve. Still on the front page, an article from the Urbana City Council by Jana Wiersema with the heading, Financial Forecast, Uncertainty, with Chance of Federal Funding Drought. Planning for 5 years of financial ups and downs is always a challenge. However, it's been especially difficult this year, said Elizabeth Hannon, Human Resource and Finance Director for the City of Urbana. The level of uncertainty here is really unprecedented, she told the City Council during a presentation on Urbana's financial forecast for fiscal years 2026 to 2030. She noted that in the past week alone, there have been a number of federal announcements that could have affected Urbana's financial outlook, such as the potential funding freeze, an order regarding U.S. Department of Transportation funded projects, and new tariffs. It's been very challenging to keep up, even with what's happening, Hannon said. And I think we can expect more of the same. According to the Finance Department's report, the current city budget depends on $7.4 million in federal grants, but only $1 million of that total had been received as of January 28th. Additionally, the $7.4 million figure does not include recently awarded federal grants that have not yet been incorporated into the budget. One particularly concerning area, Hannon said, is the federal funds Urbana receives through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's Home and Community Development Block Grant programs. She said the city has several million dollars in awarded funds from these programs that have not yet been drawn. There is also the question of allocations the city would typically expect to receive in future years. For those programs, we're probably talking about a couple million dollars a year, perhaps, Hannon said. But that's an ongoing basis. That's every year. We depend on those funds. She noted that this is a vastly different scene from the $10 million raise grant, from the $10 million raise grant that the city was recently awarded for the Florida Avenue corridor, as it is a significant one-time grant that only affects that specific project. We get to still keep what's already been granted to us, she said. Right? Asked Alderman Christopher Evans. I would not count on it, Hannon replied. She added that while it would be difficult for the federal government to try to reclaim the American Rescue Plan Act's funds that the city received, the HOME and CDBG grants are annual allocations that they receive in the form of reimbursement after making eligible expenditures. I hate to think that the federal government would find a way to claw that back, but I'm not going to say that it's not going to happen, Hannon said. Additionally, she said that the criteria included in a recent DOT order is rather concerning. The order states that the DOT, D-O-T, shall prioritize projects that, among other things, require cooperation with immigration enforcement, prohibit recipients of DOT support or assistance from imposing vaccine and mask mandates, and give preference to communities with marriage and birth rates above the national average. It's bizarre, to say the least, said Mayor Diane Marlin. The implementation of this order could have adverse effects for Urbana, which is a sanctuary city. Hannon also has concerns about how state actions might affect the city's budget, such as decisions around the percentage of income tax allocated to local governments. There's a piece of legislation that would increase that to 10% and make it permanent, she said. But if that does not happen, there's still a risk that funds could be diverted from local governments back to the state, and particularly because they're also going to be suffering some of the consequences of things that happen at the federal level. The elimination of the grocery tax in January 2026 is another hit, the city staff estimating the city will lose $1 million in recurring revenue. One of the main indicators of the city's financial health is its whether or not recurring revenue exceeds recurring expenditures, said senior financial analyst and budget coordinator Don Ho. The standing policy is that recurring expenditures should be capped at 98.5% of recurring revenues. Right now, it's projected that recurring expenses will begin to exceed revenues in fiscal year 2029. The city will need additional revenue in the future years just to maintain current services, Ho said, adding that the city has seen a long-term trend of expense growth outpacing that of revenues. According to Hannon, one strategy the city should pursue for increasing revenue is to continue promoting economic development. Additionally, she said that some of the city's other options include creating a 5% cloud tax on streaming services, which is estimated to generate approximately $300,000 per year, and creating a home rural grocery tax, which could generate up to $1 million. Increasing the local food and beverage tax to 2.5%, which could generate about $500,000 per year. However, Hannon said that even if the city were to adopt all of these measures, it would likely not be enough to absorb the programs, services, and projects that are funded through federal funds, meaning there are likely some tough decisions ahead. We think the efforts to reduce federal funding are going to continue, she said. We think Urbana and the state of Illinois are probably in the crosshairs of those efforts, unfortunately. She later added that as the city works on next year's budget, they should not plan on loading up on new programs and services, in part because they may have to find the revenue to cover programs previously funded by federal dollars. Some of those funds you're talking about are what we used to serve the most vulnerable members of our community, said Alderman Jaya Colsetti. I think it's important that we explicitly state that, especially as we're trying to stand on our values as a city. But those are also the same values that are going to make us a target. And so we need to be brave in this moment. But we also have to think about how we're going to continue to protect the most vulnerable members of our community if and when federal funding goes away. I think it's just a matter of how much. And there included in the article are two charts, one with the likely recurring revenue and expenses of the fiscal years coming up, and the growth and recurring revenue and expenses likely, with percentage points going up and down the scale. Continuing in our communities about the Virginia Theater, a piece by Jeff D'Alessio from Champaign. Blues icon booked for encore show. A year after rocking the Virginia Theater, one of music's all-time guitar greats is coming back for an encore. A month before turning 89, Chicago blues icon Buddy Guy will play the downtown Champaign venue he visited last summer during his Damn Right Farewell tour. It was announced Tuesday. The June 24th return trip is part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Famers Damn Right Encore Tour, which kicks off following a 16-show residency at the Buddy Guy's Legend Blues Club in Chicago. You name it, Guy has won it. 8 Grammys, the Presidential National Medal of Arts, a record 38 Blues Music Awards, and the Billboard Magazine Century Award for Distinguished Artistic Achievement, to name a few. Tickets are priced at $79.50 to $109.50 plus a processing fee of $8 to $11, and they go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday at the Virginia Theater box office. Taj Ferrant, a 15-year-old Australian blues prodigy, will open for Guy. And continuing on in communities from Springfield, Capital News, Illinois, with the heading Bills, Ban School Fines, Provide Working Moms Paid Time to Breastfeed. Lawmakers filed a pair of bills that would prohibit school officials from issuing fines or fees to students as punishment. House Bill 2502 and Senate Bill 1519 follow the findings of a year-long investigation by ProPublica and the Chicago Tribune. The investigation found that schools ticket students for in-school behavior, even though Illinois law bans school officials from fining students themselves. Instead, they have law enforcement officials issue tickets to students in schools for violating local ordinances. The investigation found 18,800 tickets were issued to students between 2019 and 2021, and Black students were twice as likely to be ticketed than their white peers. Brianna Roberts, co-chair of Faith Coalition's Education Task Force, called the disproportional ticketing a punishment of poverty. Psychologists have long warned about the devastating effects of labeling children at a young age, Roberts said. When students are repeatedly treated like criminals, they start to internalize that identity. State law representative LaShawn Ford, Democrat from Chicago who sponsored the bill in the House, said fees and fines don't address the underlying issues for which students are ticketed. Instead, he said he thinks school-based discipline, educational programming, and restorative justice programs should be used. If a student is caught vaping, what benefit to the student is there to have that student get a ticket? Ford said. The benefit is recognizing that there may be a problem and possibly referring the student to get help. And so, our goal is to help students and not to lead them down a path of what we have all heard, the school prison pipeline. Amy Galvin, Government Affairs Director of Stand for Children Illinois said the bill would only prohibit fines and fees given for municipal ordinance violations, most of which, she said, have been vaping or disorderly conduct. Bringing a cell phone to a classroom, that's not a municipal ordinance violation, Galvin said. Being late to class, not a municipal ordinance violation. Assaulting a teacher, not a municipal ordinance violation. It's a serious crime in which case school districts would still be allowed to engage with police for a serious crime like that, and with guns, weapons, and drugs. Breastfeeding support. Senate Bill 212 would entitle Illinois working mothers to a 30-minute paid break to pump breast milk and to breastfeed. The bill's sponsor, Senator Laura Fine, a Democrat from Glenview, said during the news conference Tuesday she personally would have benefited from the bill becoming law when she had children. I know for me, we did not have the generosity of these rules and regulations to allow me to take that break to take care of my child, Fine said. So it would be hiding in the bathroom, getting away when you possibly could, and actually having to stop breastfeeding early when it couldn't work out. Fine said the business owners she's spoken to about the bill had a positive reaction. Siobhan Starling Jones, a Springfield resident who gave birth last month, said the bill would be helpful for raising her second child. I had to stop my grandiose plans for breastfeeding with my first because it was just too much, working and breastfeeding, Starling Jones said. So I'm hoping the second time around is a little bit better. But it's a huge strain on working moms, and this is the economy that you have to work with. If a physician prescribes hypoallergenic baby formula to a child, it would be covered by the state's Medicare program under another bill. Bill sponsor state Senator Doris Turner. Bill sponsor, State Senator Doris Turner, a Democrat from Springfield, said Senate Bill 206 was inspired by a conversation with one of her constituents who had to pay $60 for a 3-day supply of hypoallergenic formula. Turner said some parents may already qualify for food assistance for women, infants and children, or WIC, which covers some types of specialized formulas. However, the type of formula a doctor prescribes might not be covered by the WIC program. Another, House GOP criticism. House Republicans called for a repeal of the Trust Act, which lawmakers passed in 2017 to stop local law enforcement agencies from enforcing federal immigration laws. House Minority Leader Tony McCombie, a Republican from Savannah, criticized the Trust Act, as well as Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson for not cooperating with Congress' request for information on Chicago's sanctuary city policies. Sorry, boys, you invited this into Illinois, McCombie said. If Governor and Mayor Johnson can't or won't solve this crisis, the Illinois House Republicans have solutions and will lead. House Republicans called on the body's Immigration Committee to hold hearings to answer questions about the status of illegal immigration in Illinois, including how much the Trust Act and sanctuary policies cost and how they have affected law enforcement. Governor J.B. Pritzker said Tuesday that changes to the Trust Act are not top of his mind with Donald Trump back in power. Today we're going to go over to the history section on the very front of the paper because I only have a few minutes left in this section of the News Gazette, and I will read J. Mark Powell's Holy Cow History in the second half. In the few minutes that we have left, I will read our history. Area history in 1925, bids on installation of the proposed Northwestern lighting system in Urbana will be open March 1st. City engineer A.M. Danley announced, adding that he was informed by the Western Electric Company that when his unit is complete, Urbana will be the best illuminated city of its size in the world. In 1975, seven Champaign City Council hopefuls are vying for 6 spots on the February 11th primary ballot. After one is eliminated, the remaining 6 will contend for 3 at-large council seats in the general election on April 1st. In 2010, the Champaign School District has issued $86.7 million in building bonds, the first school district in Champaign County to sell bonds to be repaid by the citywide school facilities sale tax. International History Today's highlight, on February 5, 2020, the Senate voted to acquit President Donald Trump, bringing to a close the third presidential trial in American history. Though a majority of senators expressed unease with Trump's pressure campaign on Ukraine, that resulted in the two articles of impeachment, just one Republican, Mitt Romney of Utah, broke with the GOP and voted to convict. On this date, in 1917, the U.S. Congress passed the Immigration Act of 1917 over President Woodrow Wilson's veto, an act that severely curtailed Asian immigration and mandated immigrant literacy testing. In 2023, Beyoncé won her 32nd Grammy to become the most decorated artist in the history of the award. And I will return with the second half of the News Gazette on this Wednesday, February 5th. Be back in a minute.